This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. Mal Lurie and Steve Missler are back as well. Gentlemen, first let's hit the hot topic, the Mueller probe. And what reaction, Mal, have we gotten so far from the congressional delegation of Maine?
Well, I've spoken with both of Maine's senators at some length about the Mueller report, and they both are just unbelievably surprised at some of the information that's in there, some of the things the president said, his actions in an attempt to get Mueller fired, those sorts of issues. But more importantly, they're both stressing the fact that this report is opening up a whole new world of information concerning the Russians' attempt to influence our elections and the investigation that's underway in the Senate Intelligence Committee. Both King and Collins are calling for an unredacted version, that is, everything up until except grand jury material, will be revealed to the Intelligence Committee. They do this all the time. They are cleared to do it. They even have this special room, that's quite a thing to see, where they have to sit down and it's swept for any bugs and all of that. So they're used to dealing with classified materials. And they want all of those materials because they think it will help with their investigation into what the Russians did, how they did it, and how they could be stopped from doing it again. So the focus of both of the senators is very much on how could we use this report to further our investigation and come up with some defenses against the Russians influencing our election.
You know, we've seen a variety of statements, and Mal has interviewed both Senator Collins and Senator King. But it's interesting to hear that even while everybody seems to be very critical of the president and his conduct, even their statements that I've heard so far almost seem like sanitizing when held up against some of the details in the report. Granted, we knew a lot about the president's conduct prior to yesterday's release because so much of it happened in public view, but the stuff that happened behind the scenes is just stunning. I mean, there's this one part in the report that illustrates how the president was incredulous that his attorney, Don McGahn, was taking notes, and it immediately drew this comparison to this really great TV series called The Wire, which is about the drug trade in Baltimore. And in one episode, one of the captains in the drug trade, Stringer Bell, just goes nuts because one of his lieutenants is taking notes about a strategy meeting. And he snatches the notebook from the lieutenant and admonishes him for documenting a criminal conspiracy. I mean, it says something that the president's conduct would lead someone to draw that kind of comparison, right? Because the report makes clear that time and again, the president attempted to derail or disrupt the investigation, which he acknowledged would imperil his presidency. And he did so by instructing his advisors to lie, or which sometimes they did, or to do things that would disrupt the investigation, which, if not for his advisors not carrying out those orders, we might be more on a path towards a legal case for obstruction of justice. I guess I understand the inclination among the president's supporters to be sort of gleeful that the investigation didn't reach a determination on that front, but it's worth noting that Mueller openly speculated that Trump could be indicted on criminal charges when he ceases being president. And of course, we're not even getting to the multiple criminal investigations that were spawned by this report that are underway as we speak.
We don't know the nature of those criminal investigations. We just know they're criminal in nature, which is one of the things that King pointed out a couple of times. The focus of this is legalities, not necessarily whether some actions were improper or not. It was dealing with, was there a criminal conspiracy between the president and Vladimir Putin, for example? Mm-hmm. No, there was not. They found no evidence of that. But time after time after time, Mueller points to instances that could be looked upon as obstruction of justice. And that's where we're going to see a lot of Democrats going down the road and trying to stretch this report into something more than it is.
Now, I was curious by the reaction of Senator Collins, and I guess I'm wondering, Mal, based on what you've been able to hear so far, is she getting out ahead of her Republican colleagues, or are several of them also turning in this kind of criticism.
I have not seen very many Republican senators with a real comment. You know, they put out statements of a couple of paragraphs, but not a sort of interview that I did with Senator Collins, where she clearly was aghast at some of the things that the president said that came out in that report. She was just not happy with it. That's not behavior of a president.
All right. Governor Mills is now past the 100-day mark in her governorship, that wonderful numeric benchmark that's been a focus since Franklin Roosevelt's first presidential term. Steve Missler, Mills wasn't trying to cure an economic depression, but what has she been able to accomplish in 100 days?
You could argue that the governor has accomplished a fair amount of the agenda that she laid out during her inauguration, or at least started down the path towards doing so. I mean, she's already fulfilled a promise to expand Medicaid, first on day one by initiating that process through executive order and then launching this enrollment campaign. And then most recently, by winning federal approval for Maine's expansion plan that will allow that federal money to begin funding the majority of the expansion coverage. And she's also pushed to tackle the opioid crisis and really just transitioning from Governor LePage's law enforcement-centric approach to one that seeks to destigmatize addiction and focus on treatment options and outreach. I think it's a little early to measure progress on that front because it's just really started, and I think everybody would acknowledge that dealing with this crisis is probably going to move at a glacial pace at best. And then, you know, I think she's also, you know, been out front on climate issues, even though the legislation that she wants has not materialized quite yet. And the other one is the one that just happened this week, which was her getting in the middle of this paid leave bill and really authoring, from what I've heard, a compromise that won an overwhelming bipartisan vote from the Labor Committee, which is a very difficult thing to do given that this proposal was vehemently opposed by business organizations and Republicans and really clamored for by the Democrats who control the legislature.
You know, those are minor type items. I would point out her biggest items are her budget. It's not done. We're not even to that wonderful point in the process where she sends over a change package, which we know is coming, where she's going to have to reorder some priorities to actually meet the needs of balancing the budget because their costs keep cropping up. Things are not fitting in nicely, as you would expect when a new governor is newly elected and they have to put that budget together in a very short period of time. So I'm expecting some substantive changes in policy in terms of money being spent when we get the change package. So let's give her her first administration, her first session, a judgment call, not her first 100 days.
Well, you know, Mal, you are a student of history, so let's go back to that leave bill for a moment. Can you remember the last time a governor apparently got that deeply into the weeds in rewriting a piece of legislation?
Unfortunately, I can. And that was Angus King dealing with the policies of managing growth in the forests. I mean, he literally was rewriting the bill himself. So it's been done before. I think this is more interesting because, of course, Janet's a Democrat dealing with other Democrats. King, as an independent, was dealing with both parties trying to rewrite that bill.
And Angus, like Janet, too, was an attorney, so that gave him some additional assistance there.
I think it's a natural thing for her to do to get involved in the actual bill writing process, which because she's a former legislator and, of course, the former attorney general and an attorney. So she's comfortable in that role, right? I mean, but it's also interesting to me that it's such a contrast to the previous 8 years, which is always my frame because that's when I started covering the State House. So Governor Paul LePage, he sort of took this approach of governing almost by executive fiat, where he would declare he wanted a certain policy, but wouldn't really get that involved personally in getting it passed through the legislature, which in reality actually was more of a political foil for him than a companion in getting his agenda through. You know what I mean? So, you know, Governor Mills seems to be, you know, taking a completely different approach, which is not altogether surprising. What I heard from several sources is that She didn't just get involved with this paid leave bill and broker a compromise. What I heard, and she downplays, is that she actually wrote it by herself. You know, that's really interesting because, you know, I mean, she's essentially really getting down into the nitty gritty, which is, I think, is an extraordinary thing, although Mal has just pointed out, not unprecedented. You know, and the other thing, too, that I've also observed is that the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, which is really opposed to the initial iteration of that bill, was nearly effusive in their praise of the governor and brokering this compromise and potentially having written the bill, and arguably more excited about it than some of the Democrats that wanted it to pass. And I think it reveals sort of a fascinating dynamic where Mills seems to be emerging as a buffer in some ways, tempering or taking a more pragmatic tack with some of the Democrats who have maybe a more ideological pursuit. You'll never hear this from Republicans publicly, you know, crediting her for this. But I think they kind of see her as a buffer in some ways and potentially an ally. You know, that's one of the reasons why the GOP is having a hard time sort of going after the governor. Instead, they've had to go after these really fringy bills that some of the Democrats have proposed that raise taxes or do things that are really, you know, sort of out there on the spectrum for liberal pursuits. And this is just a complete reversal from the previous 8 years where it was Republicans, specifically in the Senate, that were acting as a buffer to LePage. And now it's what is up is down and what is black is white. Basically, it's a completely different atmosphere.
Talk about the differences. What did the governor do with this bill? What does it say now compared to what it said initially?
The first major difference is how many employers it affects. Before, it would have been employers with five or more employees would have been mandated to allow those employees to accrue paid sick time. Now that threshold is expanded to 10 or more employees, and it's not even a paid sick leave bill any longer. It's a paid leave bill. So you don't even need to deal with the definition of a family or sickness or illness. What you're dealing with now, I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why the Maine State Chamber was so happy. Businesses don't have to try to make those interpretations on their own about definitions of family, sick time, et cetera. Now, it's just more administratively elegant for employers to deal with. It's less of a burden. And from the Democrats' perspective, it's more progressive because it's not dealing with just sick time. You don't have to be ill to take time off. And if somebody experiences an unforeseen problem at home, a boiler breaks, or there's a flooded basement or whatever, those employees can take time off. And from that vantage point, it's actually a more progressive proposal. So that's what makes the Democrats happy. And I think that's why it won overwhelming bipartisan support in the Labor Committee.
Steve Missler there, along with Mal Leary, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. The Pulse podcast is posted each Friday afternoon, and you can access it anytime at mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Past podcasts are also available. The Pulse also airs Sundays on Weekend Edition, and we air an abbreviated version Mondays on Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Join us again soon.